You are very welcome to Cawley's Call with me, Alan Cawley, powered by Benetti Menswear, a topical debate show covering all things Irish football, along with 1v1 interviews with top-class sports stars from a wide range of different sports.
It's me that's putting on the green jersey, me that's going to take flak from people to say, you're not even Irish. I was big enough to say, I'm going to take it.
There's many people I've spoke to, they always say, I used to put money on you scoring the first goal, but I've never seen any of that money, though.
And Andy, he says, I want the performances that I got from you in Scotland with you under 16s, not that rubbish that you gave me over in Oslo. Yeah.
Hi everyone, and you're very welcome back to Series 3, Episode 4 of Cawley's Call. I'm delighted to have you back. Another busy weekend, a good weekend of games. We're going to go through them all, but I was in Inchicore for a great game on Friday night, St. Pat's against Shamrock Rovers, that we're going to delve right into. I thought it was a fascinating game and a really entertaining one, and lots of little subplots and stories to come out of it, obviously, afterwards as well with the result. We'll go through the other games also. I'm joined, as usual, by my compatriot, Stuart Byrne.
Hey, Alan, yeah. Let's just say that every weekend is a good weekend now, considering what's going on in the world and what has gone on in the world for the last 2 years. So
it's crazy
to anyone moans about their weekend.
You're right.
Come and see me.
Yeah,
I won't be doing it.
I don't want to make this political and stuff, but it's crazy to think what's going on, isn't it?
We should make it political. It all matters. It's all a factor in our lives, and don't think for one second that, you know, we're tucked away in a little island away from all the trouble. It is there are implications for everybody. Like, yeah,
it's so sad.
And people need to I'm not lecturing anybody. People should really try to educate themselves as best as possible as to what's going on. And if you can do that by reading a book, please read a book. If you can do that by looking at a documentary about World War II.
Well, there's a very good documentary on Netflix.
Winter on Fire, you're probably going to talk about. Yeah, which is... Watch
and
that.
Most recent. Gives you a good insight into why these people are fighting for what they're fighting for.
It'll give you a good insight into why these people aren't going to go anywhere. Yeah. The Ukrainians are
incredible. That's what I thought. Did you
people.
Take that from as well, Sean?
Oh, they're going nowhere. They're going nowhere.
To the streets for 90 days.
They'll die for the country. They'll literally die for the country, which just puts into perspective.
Have you found out, right? I'm going to, before we get into the show, but this is really important now that you've brought it up. And I'd love for people who are listening in and listening every week to just try and put themselves in those people's shoes for 2 minutes. And if it came down to it and you were put in a situation like those,
they're a very simple analogy. And it's literally this. If the British Army landed in Ireland,
would you fight tomorrow?
Of course we would. We wouldn't even think about it.
Do you think everyone would?
Of course they would. Yeah, of course they would. I do. But the great thing about the Ukrainian people and you see it in that documentary Winter on Fire, they stood up against their own police and their own president. Obviously, he was. You know, I don't want to give it away. Really watch it. But
it's brilliant.
When you see the resilience and what they go through, they just say no. No, people have the power here, and they're young people. These are all young college people, college goers. The young people stood up and said, no, not anymore. And they were an inspiration to the older people who then joined in.
And this is only 2013, Sue.
Yeah.
So it just goes to show how recent it is and how relevant it is today and what they're fighting for. It really is amazing. And it brings us on nicely to, we've a little guest in the studio today.
I heard something.
Stop eating those crisps.
Eat the crisps. What are they?
Snacks.
I have to say, I do like snacks.
We have Harry in studio today. Say hello, Harry, to everyone.
Hi.
Into the microphone.
Hi.
Stewie, this
Harry,
was your idea.
I have to say, you are cool.
This was
Did anyone
your
ever
idea.
Tell you you're cool? Yeah? Do you like being cool? You're cool. I like snacks, by the way. I am not a huge crisp eater.
No.
But I do like snacks.
Crisps galore. Look at the little pot belly on me. Crisps, love the crisps.
Yeah, I tend to either eat snacks or I might suck the odd one.
Come on,
in the palate. Get a bit of salt.
Harry, tell
him
you can't be sucking those snacks, can you? You eat them. Do you suck them as well?
Sometimes.
Ah, you see, up a little because they go very
You're
soft.
You're supposed to be on my side.
They go soft and they just sort of dissolve in your mouth, don't they? Snacks.
All right. Well, there's a reason Harry's in with us today, Stu. You kind of come up with this idea, but just because of the hype and the positivity around the games at the moment, which is a brilliant thing, and we've all seen. Even I was in Inchicore, as I said, on Friday night. over 5,000, place packed to the rafters, brilliant atmosphere.
Yeah, the crowds
atmosphere.
Are incredible.
Brilliant, brilliant really, atmosphere. Really and obviously I bring Harry down to Dalymount and he loves it. He absolutely loves it. He was in there last Monday night at the Pats game and you suggested, well, we'll get his thoughts on how a 9-year-old feels about the League of Ireland. And do you love Bows?
Yeah.
Is he allowed to say that?
Of course he is, yeah.
He loves Bows. You do, don't you?
Uh-huh.
And you enjoyed Dalymount last Friday night?
I loved it.
Did you?
Tell me this, Harry, right? What is the... So, when Bows play on a Friday night, okay, do you wake up on Friday all excited about later on that night? Or when do you think you get excited about the game?
When my dad collects me.
Ah, lovely. So after school, would you say? And you get a bit tingly and you get ready to go. And when dad collects you, right, how long does it take to get to Dalymount, by the way? How long does it take?
20 minutes. 20 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, and are you thinking, tell me what you're thinking about when you're going to Dalymount. Is it the team or what? Is it anything in particular you're looking forward to?
The team.
Right, who the team's going to be, maybe?
Who's your favourite players?
Dawson Devoy, Liam Bott, Georgie Kelly, but he's not here anymore. Well,
he's very upset about Georgie leaving. He loved
back.
Georgie last year, didn't you?
He might come back, you never know.
And he loves going down to Dalymount, so... We do bring him along on Dalymount, as I say, it was brilliant. Even in Inchicore, there was loads of kids and families. It was brilliant. I was sitting with Brian Cash. Remember Brian Cash?
I do remember Brian Cash, yeah. Gorgeous Cash, fella, Brian.
Cash is a great fella. So he lives out by me and we went along, both myself and Brian. And we're going to get into that now, Stu. But before we do, and we've started the show on a positive, well, the Ukrainian stuff is not very positive, but certainly in terms of Harry and that. And I don't want to bring it back to a negative, but I'm going to on this occasion because we spoke last week about the trouble in Derry and people were commenting and sending me messages about it. So and a lot of people were basically saying kind of from the point of view of, well, they didn't see it as such because it wasn't on the TV screens, which is fair enough. And one lad got in touch with me and was basically saying, well, you didn't mention anything about the bottles being thrown at Anto Breslin on Monday night in Dalymount. And he was bang on. I says, I agree totally. I should have mentioned that and I saw it. And that was bang out of order. So that was another incident. So then over the weekend, Cove and Treaty, there was trouble outside the ground down there, fans fighting.
Mm.
Then on Saturday night down in the showgrounds in Sligo, there was more trouble outside the ground. I presume it was Dundalk fans against, I don't know the full story, but I saw a video of it and the video makes for a pretty grim view. And to be honest with you, it was that bad I actually turned it off. And this is five or six incidents now, Stu. And I don't know if any other people are talking about this, but I don't ever remember a time when the League of Ireland was associated with trouble outside the grounds and fighting.
Not in my memory. I mean...
There's the odd skirmish, which is fine.
Okay, let's not sort of, you know, pretend that, like, you know, this is just suddenly a new phenomenon. It's not. There's been trouble down the years. I can remember being, I might have been Harry's age, actually, to be honest. We've gone to a Pats game out in Inchicore, the old Inchicore, Richmond Road wasn't Inchicore, it wasn't Richmond Park and Richmond Road, get mixed between Richmond Road and Richmond Park, Stella Mars and Jesus, sorry, I'm getting old, lads. Richmond Park, the old Richmond Park, before it was redeveloped, okay, before that new stamp was put in, used to be kind of concrete.
The bank and all that.
Yeah, concrete dugouts, and you know, the kids would kind of get chucked up on top of the concrete dugouts, like, you know, and they watched the game. But I do remember being at a game there where Pats were playing Dundalk, and I remember a very ugly incident where a in the shed end, which is shed is gone now, but it's an open where the away fans tend to go now, but a very horrible scene that kind of broke out whereby I think the Dundalk fans were in there and the Pats fans, so an element of the Pats fans got in, and there was just a huge big melee and a big bottle thrown contest, glass bottles, yeah. So they kind of separated and they were chucking glass bottles at each other. Anyway, the point is, I'm trying to say, look, this is, you know, it hasn't been a regular thing, but it's not like it's completely, you know, a new phenomenon. It's not. And then, of course, you know, when you fast forward a few years later, and you look at the, there's been Rovers and Bow stuff down the years where stuff goes on video and all that kind of thing. And I think you'll always get an element of every club, there's always going to be one or two clowns.
Yeah, right? But I don't, like, that's what I'm saying. I don't think up to now as I say, I don't ever remember trouble associated with league, but there is the odd skirmish, whatever. Like, you'll get that anywhere. That's just in the general walk of life. You'll go to a bar or a nightclub, there'll be idiots fighting, whatever. But I'm just talking about, it's just a little bit concerning over the last, we're only 4 weeks into the season and there's been five incidents of this.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so what I'm trying to give a backstory here to say, like, there has always been trouble. And I remember even Shells went through a few years where they had one or two scumbags that were really causing trouble. It was a very, very nasty incident outside Fagan's whereby a Cork supporter was badly beaten, and this was about 10 years ago, unconscious. So, you know, and we're not trying to go at any one in particular club here. But what we are trying to do now is say that because of social media, you know, it's a lot easier to expose this, which is a good thing maybe, because if you can react to what's going on, if you can, you know, use this as evidence to start pinpointing people out. And we saw an incident last week whereby two Shamrock Rovers fans ran onto the pitch. Derry fans ran onto the pitch as well, but two Shamrock Rovers fans went for one guy in particular. And I have to correct what I said last week as well, by the way, just to clarify it. Two Shamrock Rovers fans basically zoned in on one Derry City fan with the one objective to basically beat him up. And that Derry City fan was wearing a green jacket, and he was the innocent victim in that, I should point out. And there was two guys in black jackets, and you could very clearly see who they were because there's video to show it, and there's also photographs on Sportsfile where you can pinpoint these guys out. I spent 30 minutes on a Wednesday kind of just going through who this is, and that's not the end of it, because I think that should go further. Like,
following, you know, that conversation last week, I spoke to a member of Shamrock Rovers, because that's the thing, that was the incident we spoke about that day. There's been three or four or five. So the reason for me to speak to them was, I would love to get three or four members of different clubs on to speak about just maybe the security side of things. They totally condemn what happened, and I think they're looking into it more in terms of who that person may have been or that individual to potentially ban him. I think something similar at Bowes, from what I've heard, throwing the bottle down at Anto Breslin. So that is a good thing. But I would love the clubs to come on basically to point out and use the platform to point out exactly what they're doing to stop this kind of thing. Because I think the onus is on the clubs, the responsibility is on them to call it out if there's any kind of behaviour like this, especially when we have big crowds now. There's more potential for this to happen, and to ban them, ban them, totally get rid of them. You don't want them associated with your club, because two or three idiots are dragging down the name of all the other good supporters.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the reason we're bringing up. As I say, there's been four or five incidents. I'd hate to think this will carry on. I hope it doesn't.
Well, see, Alan,
it can't become a trend.
It will if nothing is done about it. So, you know, these guys are going around filming themselves. You know, and there's a reason for that, because that's you know, there's a culture there that empowers these guys to do that. So you have the evidence is there in front of you, and I really don't think the clubs or the FAI or even the guards have an excuse anymore. If you can clearly make out from, and these videos are very, very detailed.
Well, we watched that video where you can
they're
see
very it. Detailed. Like, you know, if you can make out and what's going on, that who that person is, then there has to be repercussions, and we have to act on it. And we do have to now, I think we do now have to react to it, because something has been boiling for 18 months now, maybe even longer. And if you're telling, like, you know, if we now have a situation where we've had four or five incidents at separate games last week, I think what you're, you know, I don't know why this suddenly happened. I can hazard a guess at what it might be. And you're coming off the back of go and do your Darth Vader impression again, Harry.
Harry, Stewie's making a serious point and you're blowing into the microphone. Is he good at it?
Alright,
let's get to the football. Go on.
Very quickly, you've got four or five incidents, very serious. You have to nail them. You just have to nail these guys now, because they will just keep going. Because if they feel that, you know, they can record it. This is the thing, Alan. Like, you know, this is what they do. They show it amongst their mates. This is great crack. Look what I did here. You know, so on and so forth. I can't fathom it. I really can't understand it. But if the evidence is there, and it is, then and it's a failure on social media, on the part of social media, to kind of allow this stuff to kind of go out there. But it's awful stuff to look at.
Yeah,
really, really awful stuff to look at.
The video I saw of what went on after the match in down in Sligo was horrendous. Like, honestly, and I'm going to match in the Showgrounds all my life, and it was just, I've never seen anything like it. It was desperate. So we will look to maybe get two or three members of the different clubs potentially to come on to discuss that. We hope we don't have to discuss it again going forward. But the reason we are bringing up is because there is, anyone that doesn't think there is a slight problem, they're burying their head in their sand.
I think so.
There's four or five, six incidents now in the space of 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah, I think so. And it, look, it's, you know, the crowds are brilliant.
Brilliant.
There's a real...
Now, I was in Inchicore. There wasn't a hint of anything. It was absolutely brilliant. It was 5,500. Great atmosphere. That brings us on to the game, Stu, right? So, brilliant atmosphere, brilliant game. Shamrock Rovers, they were the better team in the first half. They looked very, very sharp. Without really any cutting edge, but very good in possession, dominating the game. Looked very sharp, as you say. Jack Byrne picking up lovely little pockets, lovely three or four lovely passes. Gaffney, as he tends to do, he does a lot of his work outside the box. Never really in amongst like the 6 yard box, 18 yard box, where it looks like he's going to score a goal. Like,
who played in the middle for Rovers? Who was the three?
So you had Gary O'Neill, you had Jack, Dylan Watts, and Mandrio. And this brings us back to our debate, and I'm going to get to this in terms of the second half. It brings us back to what we felt was the potential problem for Shamrock Rovers at the start of the season, was keeping these boys happy. So he went with that same four again, despite the fact that Graham Burke came on and scored again the other night, and he came on in Derry and changed the game, but he didn't start the other night. They were the better team in the first half, but the only chance to create it was Ronan Finn had one good chance, played in down the right-hand side. And he didn't, in fairness, run and tried to play it across the goalkeeper. Good save by Anang, who looks a very good goalkeeper. His kicking is not the best, but he looks a very good goalkeeper. Second half, there was a total change with St. Patrick's Athletic. Came out, Stu, all on the front foot, really having a go, getting in amongst Shamrock Rovers, getting in their faces. There was a young lad played, Adam O'Reilly, who was on loan from Preston. It was his first start because Lennon was injured. He was outstanding. Just his energy levels, he never stopped, tenacious, little terrier around the midfield, getting stuck in everywhere, he was brilliant. And that man, who we keep going back to every week, Forrester, was absolutely outstanding, Stu, right? And I love him, as you know, we love him. As the lad and as the player he is, it was probably, and we've praised him a lot, it was probably one of the best performances I've ever seen from him, because for the reason being, we all know his quality in possession. Out of possession, he was doing things I've never seen him do. Working, tackling, running, getting stuck in. Scored a goal. He scored the goal with his head from a corner kick. You'd never associate him with
a great header. Great, yeah, done really well.
So he had a bit of everything about him the other night. And they probably ran out deserving winners. Shamrock Rovers started chasing the game, made a couple of substitutions. This brings me on to Mandrio. He was taken off in Derry. We were surprised by it. He was taken off against Drogheda, and for the third game run, he was taken off the other night, and he wasn't one bit happy. There was words exchanged amongst himself, Stephen Bradley, a couple of the members of staff.
Right.
He wasn't a happy camper at all. And I can kind of see why, because I wouldn't have taken him off. He was your leading goal scorer last year. You're chasing the game.
Yeah.
And this is becoming a little bit of a problem, I think, in terms of just the point that we made at the start to keep them all happy. Towell never came on, didn't kick a ball. Burke came on. Burke was very good when he came on. So this is just the issues that we raised, and are beginning to rear their head.
It's a good problem, you know. But don't be under any illusions. It is a problem, you know. There's no doubt about it. And balance is the key thing here. And depending on who you're playing against, you just want to get the balance of your team right. I agree with you about Mandrio. I was quite surprised to see him taken off against Derry. However, what I would say is the substitutions definitely changed.
Yeah, that's fair.
The dynamics for Rovers. They were a much better side when they made those substitutions. And maybe the common denominator there is Dylan Watts. Maybe he just gives them that balance that they need to have. I thought when you have Gary O'Neill playing there and you have Jack Byrne and Richie Towell in front of them, they just kind of come in on top of them, and it doesn't work. Simple as that. When Dylan Watts came on, it was a much different story. Like, he plays much more advanced. He's much more willing to kind of stay away from Gary O'Neill, and the balance is better. That's where they're at. It's that simple.
Can he get the three of them into the team? So the three, and when I say the three of them, Jack Byrne, Mandrio and Burke are the three star players as such, right? With all the talent and the ability. Jack is definitely going to start. Mandrio is definitely going to start, what we thought. Now he's taking him off. But Burke is making a case that he should start. Can he get the three of them in behind the Gaffney? At the moment, they're playing 3-5-2, so would that mean changing to a 4-2-3-1 or something like that?
Do you know what that question should be put to? It should be put to Graham Burke, Richie Towell, because they're probably going to have to answer that question. But they're going to have to change their games. That's simple. I don't think it works if they play their normal game. They all just get on top of each other.
Because with the wing-backs at the moment, work. Like obviously he played Ronan and Andy Lyons were the two wing-backs. So he played the three at the back with Hoare, Grace, Lopez. So do you need to adjust that? Do you need to go... Now, to be fair to Stephen Bradley, he's always gone with that over the last two or three seasons and he seems to like that system. But do you start need to think... And look, at the end of the issue, we're posing these questions. It's four games into the season.
Exactly. I can understand your the star player thing, but
You don't like that?
I don't like that, no. No. I look at the Shamrock Rovers teams and I really... I think on their day... All those players are as impressive as each other, you know. And to be quite honest, I think Jack gives them that. He's the guy that can pick the pocket, you know. He can get goals from distance, which is huge. Really, Graham Burke used to give him that. Now and I know he's not playing at the moment, but Jack Bourne is kind of giving them that at the moment. But you're going to hear me say this word an awful lot because I believe in it so much. It's all about balance. You have to, and each individual player has to adjust their game to suit who they're playing against, and that's the key thing. Who am I playing with today?
But is the onus not on the manager to do that? To create the balance first, and then for the players to realize.
Yeah, but like obviously injuries are going to dictate if someone can play or not. Jack Bourne's not going to be there for the whole season. He's going to have times during the season where he's either.
Well, they're not leaving Jack out.
Yeah, not now. He's not. No, but he's going to need to be rested and especially when it comes into the European stuff. He'll need to recover and so on and so forth. But it comes down to the players, Alan. They have to adjust their game. I see certain players in the Shamrock Rovers team doing things that drives me. Mad, and I'm not cursing today for one very obvious reason. Drives me mad. I can't stand this thing where a particular player right does this. Give me the ball, and the arms are going everywhere, and they're dropping in on top of you, and it's like I'm great. Give me the ball. I'll do something. You don't need that in this day and age. You need someone to maybe say, I'm not going to drop in there because if I do that, I'm closing down the space on my teammate. Mm. I'm going to stay out of it. I'm going to give them an option here, and I'm going to try and get on the ball here, and then and so on and so forth. You players need to think for themselves now. Like that's not a new phenomenon. They've always had to do that.
We're mentioning there that,
but it's this. Like I've got a profile. I have to every week. I have to do something so I can put it on fucking Instagram or Twitter or
you
whatever.
Said you weren't going to curse.
Sorry, excuse me, Harry. Right, but you can't do this stuff anymore. Mm. You just can't do it anymore. It's just look.
Well, we're pointing out the big names. Here's the player who, like, I've been more than disappointed with him, and you mentioned him there in terms of the one that sits in front of the back three or four, whatever system he wants to go with. But Gary O'Neill, for me, needs to do a lot more in terms of...
He needs to be more vocal. He needs to get out of his space. But, get lost.
And a little
I'll
bit more
that.
Aggressive in his play. Yeah. Everything's so safe and too... And it might be, as you said, because they're all on top of him or the other fellas are taking the ball and they want to spray the passes. But I think he needs to come into his... This is the issue I see with him as well when they play all those number 10s, if you want, Stu. There's a lack of energy as well in terms of the legs. There's no one going beyond. So if Gaffney is the vocal point, and then you have the three or four behind him playing in the box, but no one, as you said, they all want the ball, but no one is willing to make a run beyond. So what Towell was amazing at Dundalk, he wouldn't get involved in the general build-up, but bang, see when it goes.
Yeah, but
he was making that third man run or bursting into the box or whatever. Shamrock Rovers don't have that. And in the second half, when they were chasing the game, now. Pat's defended really well, particularly Joe Redmond, he was brilliant. But everything was in front of him. It was only really when Aaron Green came on that there was a few balls going over top because Aaron had chased that. But I'm talking about midfield runners. There's four or five in that area. But it's easy to defend when it's all in front of you.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I'll answer it this way because this is probably my area. Well, it was my area of expertise when I was a young whipper.
Snapper.
Whipper snapper, yeah. In order for that to work, and this is why it worked for Towell when he was at Dundalk, right? He had a centre forward that was comfortable dropping in and linking up play. So whether it be Hoobin, whether it be Macmillan, they would drop in, but they drop in centrally, okay? And what happens is, when you think about this, for example, right? Think of a flat back four. And if the middle player drops in deep, it draws those two centre halves in, right? So what happens is the hole is in behind, you know, in a central area. Mm. If your centre forward starts to drift off left or right, what happens is the fullback naturally tucks in and covers that space in behind. So there's no gap in that central area. So all the space is down wide. So Gaffney, to be fair, right, full of legs, full of running on a sky. But someone, you need to tell him to stand still. Mm. So get yourself central. Don't just drop in. Little one touches. You're a big fella. Hold it up. But drop in deep and start drawing those centre forwards out. There's a good example of it that should have worked very early in the Derry game, when Ronan Finn burst through the middle. That's when the gap was there.
When he should have had the foul.
When he should have had the foul, right? But, and to be fair, it was a foul. Mm. Should have been a foul, right? But remember I said this to you? All defenders learn how to do that. Like, Janet, just use whatever you can. Do you think Man United could do something like that now? You know, stick your elbow into someone's neck or just do something. Mm. You know, put your life on the line. You know, you're a defender. Stop goals. Just do something. Getting off track here, but it nearly worked very early in that game. And if Finn had gotten through, then I think he probably would have seen a different game.
And that's
that sort of dynamic between Gaffney, Mandrew, and Mandrew is the guy who's trying to get himself into, and he got himself a couple of opportunities. He did, but there needs to be a relationship there that needs to improve.
Yeah, because again, it's not really like he probably out of them all is the most dynamic in terms of the legs that he has, but it's not really his game to burst beyond either. He's another one to be the 10 and getting involved and do nice tricks and whatever.
Doesn't have to burst beyond. He can just get himself into.
Well, they are playing him. He's the out of all those midfielders that we named, he's the highest one closest to Gaffney.
Yeah, he is getting himself into that central area, but he just Gaffney needs to be more.
Like, he's out here there.
Give me the ball. Mm. If someone's up his back, tight to him. Give me the ball. I'll drop in. I'll draw the centre half out of that space. And you can get yourself in there, like, you know. And all the good, I mean, look, I had it myself with Stephen Gagan at Shelbourne. Gary O'Neill was incredible at it.
Yeah. Gagan was the best.
Hooban is excellent at it. Gagan was brilliant for it because Gagan was not a physical player. So he would never get, and he wasn't quick. So he made up for all of this with flicks around the corner.
Brilliant.
Around the corner. Just deft touches.
Brilliant.
Didn't need to do anything else, like, you know.
So that's a lot on Shamrock Rovers there. But from St. Pat's point of view, Stu, we posed the question last week. Obviously, they suffered two defeats back-to-back. I was at the game in Dalymount. They were very disappointing. But that was a massive result for them. And it almost we're only four games into the season, but it actually felt in the ground that it was a massive result. It just, and I know I'm not, I don't like title races and all four games in. It almost felt as though, like, we're back in the race type thing, because that's how big a result it was. There was a brilliant atmosphere. Young Redmond was brilliant at the back. I should mention him as well. And he went back to Tim as well. I mentioned a point last week where I felt the team selection was strange on the Monday night. For whatever reason, I didn't see the game against Sligo. People had told me there was two or three that struggled, and he changed it up on the Monday. He went back to the team that played, obviously, against Shells the first night with Mark Doyle coming in off the left. Billy King was excellent the other night. Dara Burns was very good on the right, and he had Owen Doyle up front. And that looks like the way forward for them.
That's his baseline now. Yeah,
that's definitely the way forward.
His team. Yeah.
And it was a huge, huge result.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I totally agree. I wrote about this on Friday. And I hate doing this stuff. I really do. But I can only say what I've experienced. And to lose two of your first three games, you're putting yourself in a serious trouble there. Like, and you've got Shamrock Rovers at home. I felt it was a game they couldn't lose. Mm. But really, it was a game they really probably even for their own. And it's not just that if they had a loss against Rovers, they would have lost 3 out of 4, and then that's the end of the world. That's not the biggest problem. The biggest problem is the confidence and the impact it has on not just the players, but Tim. He's probably starting to doubt himself, going, what have I done here? Mm. But to their credit, you have to give them their credit. They turned it around. They've gone and won the game, played very well. Although, look, I know Rovers. I thought Rovers were very good as well on the night. They lacked a little bit of firepower. But did you see Tim Clancy after the game?
No.
punching the air. He's over to the fans. He's like, it's galvanized him. Mm. Maybe it's given him a little, you know, this boost of energy that he needed to say, do you know what? Yeah, I am going in the right direction here. We've had a little bit of a blip, but let's make sure that was a blip and that doesn't happen again, because you just at that level. And when you're at Pats, and when you look at Pats where they're at now, like, you know, they're expected to go and challenge. They're expected to have a big year. You can't get away from that.
Well, I think when you look at the table already, with obviously Derry sitting on top on 8 points and the rest of them on 6 and 5, it's all very close. I know it's only 4 games in, but hopefully, Stu, the early indications and the early signs lead us to believe there that it will be very competitive amongst hopefully 3 or 4 teams. You could nearly even throw Dundalk into the mix there, because I know Stevie, obviously, it's very much transition, but they've had a really good start. They're 6 points after 4 games. They drew at the weekend. And I just hope Bo's at frustrate, right? Because I want to preview the game Friday night. It's a massive game now, Shamrock Rovers Bo's. To me, it's the best fixture on the calendar. I love it. I can't wait to go. It's absolutely brilliant. There's 7,500 tickets sold already, Stu. It's amazing. And
yeah, it's great.
The fact that Rovers got beaten last week, and obviously Bo's coming
to
town. In Tala. Right. Coming to town. I think it's going to be outstanding. But this is Bo's. This is my little... Now, I spoke to someone after the match who said they actually were really unlucky. But coming off the back of a really good performance against St. Pat's on the Monday night and playing really well and getting a good result, you go up to Finn Harps, granted not an easy place to go. We all know travelling and pitch and whatever the case may be. But you take the lead after whatever how many minutes it was, and you're like 20 minutes to go, 25 minutes to go. Surely you just manage the game and see it out.
Yeah,
and to come away with just a 1-1 end, like, that one must be so frustrating.
Yeah, well, it would be for the manager. Like, I can imagine Trevor as well, because this is the kind of stuff that
that catches them out, Stu, come the end of the season. We look back come the end of the season and say they're 18 points off Shamrock Rovers or Derry, or you'll say, remember that 2 points we dropped that night, and remember that, and these 2 points add up.
So absolutely, and the reason I brought up Trevor and Longer, to be fair, but I brought up Trevor because I'm thinking of Trevor as a player, okay? I'd be similar to myself, like, you know, experience. Exactly what you said, we're 1-0 up, we're away from home, shut up shop, you know, and you're getting on to players, you're communicating, you're
making. Delay throw ins.
Do they have that player anymore, Alan? Bucco's gone.
True, yeah, good point.
Bucco's gone. So that's the gap. That experience deficit needs to make that up, like, you know, and I can imagine Trevor, I can just see him now. Because I was only with him there a couple of weeks back, and I could just say, no, going fucking mad and saying, this is the basics, lads. Mm. This is the easy stuff. Mm. That's the easy stuff. You know, and it should be the easy stuff. You take a lead, you're away from home. It's all about shape, it's communicating, it's getting tight, it's just energy closing down. You know, that should be the easy stuff in the game. So that's why it is frustrating.
Yeah, and if they come away with the win there, that's 7 points after three games, you'd be off to a flying start. Now, it's still been an okay start around 5 points, but in terms of momentum and going forward and all that, it would have been a massive start for them, and going into the game Friday night.
I missed the red card. What happened there?
A terrible red card. Yeah, second yellow. And I heard the official. I don't want to get into banging on about officials so early in the season. The couple of games I've been to so far, the officials have been good. But I saw the clip with Promise was sent off for a second yellow, and I think it was 8 yellows in the game. I saw plenty of lads tweeting about it, and apparently there wasn't a tackle in the game. So I hope we're not going down that road again. But it was, and the biggest thing about that, Stu, as well, he'll be a huge loss Friday night.
Yeah,
he's very raw. Technically needs to improve massively, but he's a handful. He's a real handful. And in that big pitch in Tala, they will miss him Friday night.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, you know, he's physical, quick. They're lacking that sort of focal point up front, obviously, with the losses with Georgie Kelly. But they're going to have to make do now. It's going to be a difficult game. And to be fair to them, I think I remember them going to Tala.
Oh, they were brilliant
last year when they were
brilliant.
Under the cosh. They were down Georgie Kelly, actually, weren't they?
It was the best performance to put in all season. They were outstanding,
yeah. So,
Should be a cracker. Should be an absolute cracker. Harry?
They're going to have to dig deep.
Who's going to win Friday night? Will they? What score? 2-0, do you think? Up in Tala against Shamrock Rovers, 2-0. Who'll score?
Who would you like to score?
Bert, if he's back. Mm-hmm. Dawson? Yeah. You like Dawson? Yeah.
How many times do you think you've been to Tala Stadium?
About 8 times.
He's been a few,
me.
Yeah.
It's more than me. Would you gone to a few Ireland games?
He's taking your job.
What's going on here? Would you have gone to a few of the under 21 games there, Ireland under 21s, maybe?
No, all Shamrock Rovers.
All Shamrock Rovers and Bowles games, were they? Or just Shamrock Rovers?
Shamrock Rovers, yeah.
What do you think of what do you think of Tala Stadium? Isn't it really cool? Yeah.
Well, you're playing it.
Wait, they're playing.
Playing exactly Shamrock Rovers Sunday. Portmarnock under 9s, big game.
Where's that game?
Over in Roadstone.
Very good.
Yeah.
So that'll be a nice pitch, I'd say. So get the ball down and play it around.
They have a lovely setup, Shamrock Rovers, the academy setup. But yeah, so that's the game, Stu. I'm really looking forward to that. The other games on Friday night, and you're looking at them there. Derry City, we have to mention Derry, sitting top of the table. They beat Shelburne 1-0. Shelburne are struggling too.
Yeah, they're a little bit tootless at the moment. Lack somebody up top to put the ball in the back. And I wasn't at the game on Friday. I was talking to Kenny Cunningham about it. Actually, believe it or not, because I was at something on.
Yeah, do you want to mention the gig you were at Saturday night?
Yeah, I'll just quickly talk about Shells. He basically, I think he liked what he saw from Shelburne. Kenny, he liked Derry. To be fair to him now, he said he's very impressed by Derry.
Will Kenny say it? Kenny doesn't have a bad word to say about
anyone. It took him about 25 minutes to get that point across me, how good Derry were. So at that stage, I was a bit like your man, was it an airplane, was a striker on the plane, where he was just getting the ear burnt off him.
By Kenny, the football club.
I started to throw petrol and everything on top of myself. But look, a little bit similar to the when you think back to the Pats games, the Pats game, open game of the season, Shells had some wonderful opportunities, but they're just little. Conviction was a big thing. Like, you know, it was two or three players had chances in the game, so it wasn't down to one player. They need someone to stick the ball in the back of the net, and they could probably do with a little bit of a confidence boost. So I think I wouldn't be hugely looking at the Derry result. More so, the UCD game was the one that's kind of really frustrated them. I think it's frustrated Damien Duff as well. And listening to him talking after that game, he was disappointed with the team, having started so well. But just
they've done Dundalk this Friday night at home, Shelburne.
Yeah, well, look, the thing is for Shells, the home games are huge for them. It's that simple, you know. Any game in Tolka Park is huge for them, and they are. I wouldn't say their games, you know, that's going to be another difficult game. Look, you don't get easy games, never did in this league. Like, you know, you're either playing against serious quality or you're playing against well organized teams, and each challenge, you know, brings a different response. So,
to be fair to them, there are 4 points. The one thing I said at the start, I felt the recruitment. They've signed ordinary players, in my view, right? But that's fine in terms of, I'm not sure what their aspirations were at the start of the year, and I felt a realistic target for them at the start of the season was just to get back and establish themselves in the league. That's all they need to do, Stu. They don't need to set unrealistic targets in terms of. Now, I'm not saying that they are.
You can't get that into the head of the players. You can't. You have to sort of at it from a development point of view. You
all right. Well, at the start of the year, someone says to you, Shelburne, yeah, this is where we'll be. What would you have predicted for Shelburne this season? Or what would you have wanted to see?
Mid-table, and possibly even, you know, a decent cup run. You could get to the semi-final.
Yeah, so
you could get to the final of a cup.
So mid-table, there's 7.
You could win a cup. That's, yeah, the FAI Cup. You mean 6 games wins you
the
cup.
But for in terms of the future going forward and the investment now that's in the club and all the positivity around it, you have to stay in the division.
So if they
finish 7th. Yeah. Now, I didn't think they'd be relegated, but I didn't think they would be challenged for Europe or winning leagues either.
They won't be relegated. I'm telling you, from what I've seen of them, I think they will only improve. I think, you know, they're just at a stage now where they're learning. It's a big jump in the Premier Division. They're kind of learning, you know, the different pace, different quality. Doing it for 90 minutes is a key thing as well, you know, because when you look at them at the moment, their first half performances are tending to be very good, and then, you know, might be losing that. So that's a kind of a mental focus, which is always a difficult part of it. But Duffer, to be honest, you know, and I'm only going from what I listened to what Damien is saying, and I like what he's saying. He wants to push them. He has to push them.
Absolutely.
And I do genuinely think he has to throw out the odd soundbite saying that this is a club that should be winning trophies might not do it for a while now, for a few years, but they will be getting to a stage where they're going to start doing that. And you have to get that across the players.
No, but you're missing.
They have to push them. I know you're not. They have to push themselves as well.
Yeah, and to be fair, he's not there just to finish seventh. I'm not suggesting that.
What I'm saying
is the first year that they're back in the league now with a high-profile manager, with a lot of investment coming in from the outside, the club is in a really good place. There's a lot of positive vibes around the place. Just finish seventh, sixth or seventh. I'm not saying, that's not me saying right off the season.
You can't do that as a player. I could never comprehend that as a player. You can't.
So if you're playing in that Shelburne squad,
I played in the Longford team.
What then? You think you're going to win the league?
We were, believe it or not, right? This is the God's honest truth. Yeah,
I stopped you.
But what? So I remember playing in Stephen Kenny's Longford team, right? Mm. And for the, I'd say 60% of that season, we were either second or first. And then we fell off a cliff because of inexperience and whatever the case may be. But I would say we ended up finished 6th or 7th because of that push. Pete Mann's Pat's team, 2010, we were top of the table for about 75% of that season. You know, there's the team that ended up finishing 5th. You can't tell players, listen.
No, I'm not saying that Damien Duff is interesting. You know what, lads? We'll finish 7th, that'll be grand. I'm not saying that.
People at the club are saying, listen, of course
he's pushing him. And yeah, absolutely, and he will. And I'm saying, stabilise yourself now. Establish yourself back your first season. A lot of new players. A whole new squad, effectively. Have a good season in terms of finishing mid-table and build on that. That's not me saying the manager's going to instant. You know what, lads? We lose this week because we're going to finish 7th anyway. It's grand.
Yeah, I know. But as a manager, right? So how do you, as a manager, what do you say to these players? I'll tell you what I was saying to them. I want the best out of you. I want you to show me how good you are. But the point will be, if you're not good enough, you won't be here. Mm. And that's it.
And I'm sure he's telling them that. But that, like,
and players need that. You need that as a player.
They were never going to win a league or anywhere even near it. And they won't with that squad.
Who shells?
Yeah.
Definitely weren't saying that this year.
No.
I'm just trying to tell you, I've never been.
You're a different breed.
Never been at any club where someone said, "Listen, you know, it's."
Well, Harry, would you like if Stuart was your manager?
The goal.
I don't know.
Do you think he'd be a good manager?
Kind of.
Harry, now, there was a quiz, this week's quiz, okay? And who's your favourite player?
Harry Kane.
Right. So you've now won this week's quiz. Because the right answer was Harry Kane. Okay. And your prize is a donut from Offbeat Donuts. What's your favourite donut?
For those listening, he actually has a bag of donuts. I've got eight
donuts here, right? So there's cookies and cream.
This isn't an ad for Offbeat.
Bueno, do you like Bueno?
Who's Bueno?
Kinder Bueno. Bueno. Tell you what, you tell me which one of them you want.
Who's eating these in your house? It's not you.
There, I'm bringing them home for the family. I'm under a bit of pressure.
There's about 16 donuts on the table, people.
I'm under a bit of pressure.
And I didn't bring them.
Here's a bit of advice to anyone out there who's got 4 kids, right? Bring home Offbeat donuts once in a while.
He's making up for something he did.
Unbelievable.
So you look at the fixed shell and
Dundalk. Don't lick one and then put it back in, okay?
Have we been wrong about Dundalk?
I think it's very early to say. Yeah. I think it's very early to say.
They've had a good start, haven't they?
Yeah, they needed to, Al. I just think they needed to. But it's very early to say. I mean, I still think, you know, you look at how competitive the league was for the first for the first half last year. Yeah, we had Pat's Sligo Rovers and Rovers leading the charge. But it was a very, very competitive mid-table thing going on for, I'd say, the first half of the season. And then it kind of tailed off. Yeah, so it's very hard to tell. I think Dundalk will be all right. I think they're in a scrap to get European place. I do. I think they're in a real scrap to get European place.
I think there's 3 or 4 teams there, but judging by it so far, I think it is really competitive. So that bodes well for the future. Here's the next team that we must mention. They got off their first win, Big Kev.
Yeah.
4-2 to beat UCD.
Four goals.
Yeah, and it was great to see them get off to a good well, get their first victory, because I know they had suffered the two defeats, but by all accounts, from what I've read and from what I've heard, they actually gave a really good account of themselves last Monday night in Tallaght. And at 2-1, they were banging the game and were posing Shamrock Rovers plenty of questions. And then obviously they conceded the third and that was it. So I think Kev was really upbeat after that game, despite the fact that that was their second one to lose. So going into that, there was, I wouldn't say there was pressure, but the four teams that I see being down there is Drogheda, UCD, Shelburne and Finn Harps. So those games amongst each other, they're the ones where you're really kind of, those clubs are putting pressure on themselves to try and get a victory. And Drogheda at home, Conor Hoey, we must mention, the chairman as well, did a brilliant initiative last week where he was giving out the free tickets as reward for basically saying people's help during the pandemic. So there was nearly 2,500 at Drogheda UCD, which was brilliant.
Where can you get 2,500 in there? Well, they wasn't on the roofs of the gas or something, were they?
They got them in. They got, there was 2,300 and it apparently was brilliant. So
yeah,
another
standing in the standing room over the far side, you can get a big crowd.
And there was a huge crowd. So they obviously, as I say, the 1-4-2, Chris Lyons, who had a really good season for them last year, and Dean Williams was brought in, got the goals. Gary Deegan scored the first one as well. And I'm delighted to see Kev get his first win, because I'm not saying there was pressure, but when you're coming off the back of two defeats, you're just wondering, where's that first win going to come from, I suppose.
And
their first game was called off as well. They've only played
three games. Have to ride off the Rovers result as well. I know they played well, and you are using that as a way to put a bit of shape on your team, and by all means they did play well against Rovers, but you know, home games are huge for them, you know, as they are for Shells, you know, the same thing for Drogheda. And obviously, having been beaten by Shells in their last home game, I think it was huge that they really didn't. They probably needed to go and win this one, like, to be quite honest. And you're mentioning the fact that they're expecting.
There's a boy worth watching.
The ones around them.
I heard he was outstanding the other night. Kevin won't want me to bring this up, but I heard he was outstanding. He's on loan from Lincoln. Sean Roan is his name, Stu, right? Just remember the name.
Sean Roan,
18 years of age. Remember the name. That's all I'll say. We won't say any more about it. For people listening, when Drogheda are playing, just watch out for this kid. I heard he's the business.
Right. Okay.
Okay, Sean Roan. And Harry, any message for Uncle Kev got his first win? Who's the best coach in Ireland?
Uncle Kev.
Is he, yeah? Does Kev ever buy you donuts, does he?
Sometimes, maybe.
Does he?
Kevin and Harry are best of friends.
Cookies and cream. Do you like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, they like Oreos, I think. They're nice, aren't they?
When Drogheda plays against Bohemians, who will you be supporting?
Bows.
You'll go against Uncle Kev.
Tell me this, Harry Wright.
That's allowed.
What would you? Is there anything you? What's your most favourite thing about Dalymount? The ground.
The atmosphere.
Yeah, the atmosphere. Yeah. And what would you like to change? Anything you'd like to change? And it doesn't have to be Dalymount. Even some of the other grounds. Anything in particular?
No.
More donut shops.
From a young kid's perspective, right?
Yeah.
So there was a lot of talk about the pyro stuff last week, and Sligo Rovers came out and said, we won't be allowing that in the ground. And
the which?
You know, the flares and all the pyrotechnic stuff or whatever. And they said, because it costs them, flares cost them to get fined. But it adds so much to the colour and the atmosphere. Do you love when the atmosphere and, you know, when the flares are going off? Remember last Monday night and when Bo scored and that all the flares were going off? It looks deadly, doesn't it?
Uh-huh. Yeah, there's an easy answer to that. Well, not an easy answer, but like if you can get the clubs to maybe do
a section.
Do it like, or you can put these things up on the roof or something like that. And every time there's a goal, just set a couple of them off. Or I'm sure there are ways around that. I do get that, I do agree. I think that there's a an element of how would you put it, like, you know, you're trying to create a show, aren't you?
An event.
You're basically what you're trying to do is trying to use what you have, but by adding little elements and inexpensive elements, albeit they're dangerous. Okay, so let's take the danger over. How can we sort of introduce these interactive sort of elements to add to the entertainment value? I'm sure we can come up with something, whether it's a little light show, whether it's something. Has anybody out there invented a safe flare? There has to be something, you know.
Yeah, or even it's interesting that you raised that point, Shu, because obviously all the clubs now have their own supporters clubs as such. I wonder how much consultation or discussion goes in amongst the supporters group and the clubs do the meet and do the supporters get together and say to the heads of each club and say, look, we're thinking of putting on this kind of show thing, or we've these flares for Friday night, and the club are saying, oh, hold on a minute, you can't do that. Is there any kind of middle ground where they're meeting up and saying, okay,
yeah,
we'll allow you to do this, but maybe don't do this one? Or I'd love to know if anyone knows out there, you're part of
supporters. I think there's a scope for that. I think there's definitely
you would like
scope
to think
for
so,
that,
wouldn't
yeah.
you? Because I think everything is on the table now in terms of where we can take this and the league and the eyes that are on it and the focus that are on it. So I think across the board, whether it's clubs, supporters, clubs, whatever the case may be, I think these discussions need to be had amongst people and to try and enhance, as you say, the event on the Friday night rather than the club being at loggerheads with the supporters club and not allowing this and not allowing that, and if you do this you're not going to get in. And can they come together now? Maybe they are coming together, I don't know, that's the question I'm asking, but if anyone knows out there, let us know and get in touch, because I definitely think we were in Chicor, as I said, and the teams came out onto the pitch, they had the flares in the stand, all the smoke, now it's horrible in the smell, it's there for 2 or 3 minutes whatever and it's gone. But it does add to the whole thing on a Friday night. Like.
Well, here's a question, right? Bring up a good point. What would be the best in-game sort of atmospherical event you would have experienced? It could be anything. Anything at all now. It could be like a light show going off for a goal. It could be...
I think the Aviva Stadium does a very good one.
The light show that goes off when the goals go in?
Or the one they did before Ireland-Portugal. That was unbelievable.
Yeah,
there was a huge atmosphere for that.
I remember,
and the cup final was unbelievable. Just gone.
Do you remember we played Lille?
Yeah.
Do you remember the Moosey Lou thing? I thought that was incredible. So what happened? You had a guy on the microphone, and he was and they get Moosey Lou, Moosey Lou. Atletico, you hear it at Atletico Madrid. You hear it at
the fans say the surname.
Yeah, this kind of guy who kind of choreographs the crowd with the megaphone. That's brilliant.
Yeah,
it's brilliant.
Gets to play the whole place.
Yeah, get a bit of that going on. Yeah, Harry, have you got a megaphone?
No.
Okay, we'll get you.
But
sorted out.
There's a. But does it work better?
We're going to get you sorted out for Rovers and Bows, right? I'm going to hear Harry going.
Does it work better though with a Moosey Lou than a Gary Deegan? We don't have the names for us.
Stewart.
No, who?
Burn. So your favourite player is Dawson Devoy, is it? So can we come up with
Dawson
George
Devoy? Now that George is gone.
Dawson. You don't even have to say it. You just have to go. Dawson Devoy.
UCD are struggling.
Well, you know, the that mightn't be a huge revolution to them or to anybody, but UCD will just keep going. You know,
they'll win games. We knew the Gulf was going to be big, but I think as well, Kerrigan got a great goal, Liam Kerrigan the other night against Drogheda. If anyone hasn't seen it, the lob / volley, the keeper made a mistake, but it was a great finish. And I think they're going to lose them as well in the summer from what I'm hearing, and that will be a major blow to them. But we always expected that was going to be the case. The fixtures for Friday night, Stu. Draw it against Sligo Rovers. Sligo Rovers, again, picked up a point the other night. It's been a decent enough start from them. By all accounts, the pitch is dreadful. I'm not sure what's going on down there in the showgrounds, but the pitch. Stephen O'Donnell was highly critical after the match, and rightly so. It was the first home game of the season, and the pitch was absolutely horrendous. He basically wrote off the match. Every question that was asked about the football side of the game, he says, that question's irrelevant because we couldn't play football on this pitch.
I think that's a problem. And to be honest, like Sligo, Sligo wasn't the only one. Talca wasn't great, but it held up. It did hold up. Talca, I have to say, there was worries that it wouldn't, but it did. I think what's happened, Alan, is the early start has caught a few people out. Shouldn't catch you out, but I think it has. The bringing the season forward a few weeks, and the fact that we go back to this phrase, an industry, football being an industry in the game here, we're getting there very slowly, but we've a long way to go, and I just don't think there's no excuse for anyone for your pitch to be in poor condition.
No, and I agree totally, and I'm glad you brought that up, because again, if we're trying to accentuate the positives here about what's going on and the crowds and there's eyes on the league and there's interest in it and all this, and it's positive at the moment, everybody has to buy into that in terms of a professional mindset. For the most important thing is the pitch for the players. So if you can't have a good pitch for the players on a Friday night, straight away you're starting behind eight ball.
A good pitch makes you play.
Of course it does.
It makes you play. And believe me, Alan, I played in the time. I mean, I played in the era of the, how would you describe it, the kind of transitioning era from the kind of part-timey to the full-time. And Jesus almighty, don't want to go. I mean, it's the difference a good pitch makes is just, well, look, the mindset of the player, the confidence of the player, just to even the support. And supporters, again, another thing I would constantly say, support, you can't fool them anymore. They're well-educated, like, you know, because there's a lot of exposure to the game now. You know, supporters know what they're watching. You know, they're tactically astute now. They can see a good technical player, and they know when the pitch is poor, and it ruins the experience for them as well. So it's just no excuses. Yeah. It's that simple.
So that was a bore draw by all accounts because of the state of the pitch. But it's been a decent start for Sligo Rovers. They're away to Drogheda on Friday night. Shelburne, as we discussed, at home to Dundalk. UCD at home to Derry City. Derry City on their travels again, but they've had a great start. Finn Harps at home to St Patrick's Athletic. You'd be hoping the Pats will follow up that good victory against Shamrock Rovers. Finn Harps getting a good point last week. And the big one in Tala, Shamrock Rovers against Bohemians. I can't wait for Stu. As I say, I've gone to I've gone to every Derby game in the last 3 or 4 years, and they're unbelievable.
The first one there'll be a full crowd in since?
There was one in there hasn't been 2 years. Well, so
for a good while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be absolutely electric.
I imagine so.
And they are. And I have to say to both clubs, and I know there's a bit of shithousery, is that what you call it, going on at the moment, because Shamrock Rovers come out with the thing online with Andy Lyons on the front of the programme, so they're already winding each other up.
No pressure, Andy.
Yeah. Imagine the stick he's going to get. But at least it's in Tala.
Can he play with an umbrella?
but yeah, they're brilliant fixtures, both clubs. Hopefully it doesn't break out into trouble, or we're not talking about stuff like that next week, but we do want an unbelievable atmosphere. And to be fair to the both sets of players, they've been great games. The last 3 or 4 years, great games.
They're always great games. They bring their own sense of...
It's a unique occasion, yeah, those. They're brilliant, aren't they? Look, people can talk about derbies all over the world and they're famous derbies. The Bows Shamrock Rovers, I have to say, is absolutely brilliant.
It is, yeah. And the supporters play a huge part in that. Probably, you might even argue, they play the biggest role in that. Not the gobshites now. So if you're a gobshite... stay at home. If you're a gobshite, stay at home, or you know, take up kickboxing or MMA or something like that, and leave this wonderful, beautiful game alone, please. Thanks very much.
The results from the first division, right? Cove Ramblers 3-0, 0-0. Galway Waterford 2-2. Waterford 2-0 up as well. Wexford 1-2-1, and Longford and Cork was 0-0 on Saturday night. And the fixtures for next week in the first division as well. Bray at home to Galway, Cork City, Cove Ramblers, Treaty, Longford, Waterford, Wexford. I was in Piemont on Saturday night too. I'll finish with this. You can finish where you were on Saturday evening, because I know you were at an event as well, and tell us about it. But on Saturday evening, I was out watching Piemont and Sligo Rovers, their first ever competitive fixture in the Women's National League. Unfortunately, they lost 6-0, but it was a historical day for the club, and it's brilliant to think. I have a young girl myself now. At the minute, she's playing Gaelic. We need to change that, Harry. But to see young girls playing and all, and the opportunities now for them to go on and play with Sligo Rovers or whatever club, it's brilliant.
I have to say, and it's really sort of accelerated in the last couple of years. Hopefully the conditions improve for the women's teams, because we were there, believe it or not. Was that long ago? But men's
a good few years. I mean,
the men's team were there. There was a time where training facilities were awful. Like, I can remember Alan. We used to play for Bows, right? I was only a kid. I signed from Stella Maris, and you train Tuesday, right, out in the YMCA in Sandy Mount there, right, and the lights were like there was one floodlit. One floodlight that lit up a corner in like a field kind of thing. He just run for like
that
an hour.
I don't
even know why the light was there.
Was that League of Ireland level?
That was League of Ireland level. Yeah, the Turlock O'Connell, Larry Carberry. It was disgraceful.
Yeah,
absolutely disgraceful. He just ran the B off everyone for an hour, and then you had this shit five aside for 30 minutes on a. You couldn't see anything. And then there's no hot water for showers. There wasn't. That's just pathetic, you know. It really was. So, and we had to fight. The PFA had to fight for it all. And luckily enough, it took time. But I don't want the women to go through that. I don't want it to take 20 years. Mm. It should be done now. Because just do it now. Like, you know, and the great thing I think is happening now, which is great to see, the women's teams are playing in the same ground as the men's team, so they're getting access to those facilities, you know. And this is all good for the game. This can only benefit the game, because we want more families at games. But of course, you know, you're going to get that. You're going to get a huge boost in crowds if there's a women's team involved, like, you know. So look, it's all good. And just to kind of segue into what I was doing on Saturday night, I was in a part of a. I was at the Save Talca Park gig in the Button Factory on Saturday night, and it was brilliant. Pearl Slattery was there. I was sitting beside her, Shane Dawson, Kenny Cunningham, Brian Kerr, just basically talking about Talca Park as a stadium, the wonderful memories it gave us.
What's your best memory of Talca Park?
My best memory of Talca
Park? I'm sure you were asked that Saturday, but tell us.
I actually wasn't asked it, but winning the league in 06 was the best memory, yeah. Purely because of the difficulties we had that year, like, you know,
the famous interview.
Yeah, well, that wasn't the favorite thing, but like that the interview was the release from what had been an absolutely awful year, like an awful year. I had plans to maybe try and document what happened that year. It was just awful.
Can you remember every incident about the year? If someone was to sit down with you now and go,
I remember not. Yeah, it would come back to me. Yeah, it's very raw, like, you know, because it was a very emotional year, because we kind of knew it was up, Al. Yeah. That's the thing, like, you know, we weren't getting paid.
But can you remember vividly, say, Pat coming in and sitting down with the players and saying, "Look, lads, there's no wages this week," or the different incidents, and going home then to Nula and the kids, wherever, and kind of saying, "Look."
Yeah,
the uncertainty around it.
Oh, completely. Yeah, and the pressure that it put on individuals in terms of like their mortgages. And I remember fellas nearly crying over it not getting paid, and that they were under huge pressure, like just to pay their mortgage and all. And we went and won a league title.
You know, it's incredible, really.
It's incredible, and that's the half of it. That's the half.
I wonder do people even realize how big of an achievement that was to win the league, considering all that was going on behind. I don't think people do.
Well, I'm hoping to maybe do something about that. That's a different thing. But
Night went well. Saturday.
The night was brilliant. Yeah, we had it was great. I have to say, Brian Kerr is absolutely. This guy could do stand up. He could just literally.
Brian's legend.
He's incredible.
I was chatting him Friday night. He was in Pat's Friday night. He was great. He was with you Saturday. He was in the Etihad on
Sunday. He flew over to Manchester.
And he was in Dalymount last night at a campaign or a fundraiser for Ukraine with the walking tour.
He's brilliant.
He'll be on this soon. Brian's a legend. We love Brian.
We'll have to bring him in, yeah. You need 2 hours for that, but
if there was anyone getting 2 hours, he'll be getting two hours.
He's told some brilliant stories. And then, of course, there was music from Oski Bravo. I had to leave, unfortunately. I drove and had to go. Oski Bravo, they were great. And of course, For those I love, David Balth. Yeah, he's a phenomenon at the moment. Might get him in, having an old yap.
I'd love to, yeah.
Yeah,
because he's doing really well. He won the RTE Choice Prize, didn't he?
He won the album of the year. Yeah. Congratulations to him. I'll get him in a headlock. he's from Kilmore now. Tough lad.
Is he tough?
Actually, he's kickboxing. Wow. That's a thing. So I might need you. I'll get him in a headlock. He'll just grab his legs.
Have you gone down the road? I've been
just grab his legs.
Okay, that was episode 4, people. Thanks a million for joining us. Paul Morris looking after everything in the green room. Is it the green room? Studio room. What do you call it? The production room,
yeah. Behind the glass.
Thanks as always. Massive thanks to Benetti Menswear, because without them, we wouldn't be here. We do have plans, people. A couple of things coming up in terms of maybe little road shows. We don't want to give away too much yet, but there's a couple of little plans in place. We'll keep you posted on that. And of course, our special guest this week, Harry. Thanks a million for joining us.
Harry, what do you think of that donut?
Good.
Will you come back again some other day?
Out of 10, what would you give that now?
9 out of 10.
Wow.
That's very good. Offbeat. Harry, thanks a million for joining us.
Well done, Harry. You're a star.
Perfect. That's all. Thank you, folks.
Thank you for listening to Cawley's Call, powered by Benetti Menswear. For more interviews like this, please subscribe to my podcast or follow on all my social media channels.